90 minutes down, 90 minutes to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Follow us on Instagram at Illegal Curve. And the website with the latest NHL and CBA news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's our good friend from the Globe and Mail, Bruce Daubig. And Bruce, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Well, other than the fact there's no hockey, I'm okay.
Yeah, I guess the things we can and can't control, as long as you're good on the ones that are in our control.
Exactly.
Yeah. Bruce, you wrote in your column yesterday in the Globe and Mail, and we'll tweet it out on our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve, right now, that the CBC is secretly hoping for the NHL season to be canceled. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, the way they look at it is they're worried they can't afford the new contract, which is basically going to be bid on in the next 18 months. If this whole season is canceled, they will get a free year at the end of this current deal, which will give them a little more time to figure out how to get the money together to stay in the bidding when they have the national rights come up next time.
Bruce, you know, obviously there's been a ton of coverage of the lockout. Can you kind of give your impression of, you know, and your views on how the sports media, maybe from the television perspective, has covered the lockout thus far?
Well, if it's the American media, barely covered. I mean, they've given it some cursory coverage, but they got lots of other things with the football season on that they can cover. So, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think they've done terribly much. The Canadians, you know, the networks, TSN and Sportsnet, they've done a lot. They've spent a lot of money on the coverage of it and being there and trying to stay on top of it and trying to bring people as much information as they could. But let's face it, you know, that's their bread and butter. The hockey is their bread and butter, and they got to cover it whether it's a lockout or whether it's a game. And so, you know, there you go.
Bruce, which major television network, and, you know, you just mentioned TSN and Sportsnet, but either television network in the U.S. or in Canada do you think is hurting the most from the fact that there's no NHL hockey right now?
Is hurting the most?
Yes.
Probably CBC in Canada, because both TSN and Sportsnet, at least in the short term, they are able to save on production costs and yet still get themselves their membership fees or their subscription fees. So in the short term, they're doing okay. CBC doesn't have that. CBC has had to pay the full $100 million that it owes to the NHL for rights this year, and it has no content to go with. So that's why I get back to the point that they're hoping they get a free year at the end of this in which they can try to make up some of this money.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail. Bruce, right off the outset of this interview, I mentioned our Twitter feed. And one of the sizable differences between the 2004-05 lockout and this lockout is the existence of Twitter and, you know, how it's affected the lockout. Is it just about the worst possible form of relaying information?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think, in fact, it's a very good information aggregator. If you're a person who's interested in the lockout and trying to find out what the latest is, what the issues are, how they're decided, etc., I think Twitter has been a real valuable addition to the average fan, in particular in the United States, where they don't have the blanket coverage, as I just said, of the networks. That's the place where they get their information. So, I wouldn't say that it's been bad at all for it. I think it's been a really good source of information. There's rumor, and then there's, you know, guys getting a little worked up over things that maybe aren't accurate. But by and large, most of the information I've seen has been pretty accurate. Anybody who's putting out stuff that's wrong gets slapped down pretty quick.
Bruce, you know, during the NFL lockout, the NFL Network's Albert Breer really made a name for himself. He did a lot of reporting, obviously, during the lockout and made a name for himself.
Yep.
Do you think there's been anyone like that, covering this NHL lockout?
I don't think there's been anybody new. I mean, I think it's reinforced the reputations of people like Bob McKenzie and Darren Dreger at TSN and Nick Kyprios and Doug McClain over at Sportsnet and John Shannon. I think Shannon's taken maybe a little bit step forward in the public's view. But by and large, the guys who are reporting on it this time are the guys who reported on the stuff last time. And so I don't think there's any new star out of it. The star might be a non-person. It might, as I say, it might be Twitter. It might be social media. That's the source that is different from last time, and it has kind of come out. And there's so many interesting people out there who aren't connected to mainstream media who are on it that you can, you know, you can listen to, and they have their opinions and they put stuff in from time to time. So that would, you know, if you're talking about the Rookie of the Year, the Calder Award for broadcasting during the lockout, I'd probably say Twitter and social media.
Bruce, the Globe recently went to a paywall, and they've had, you know, 10 articles you can read now, and then they move you over to pay content. A lot of other papers are moving to that. The Sun has here in Winnipeg, and many others across North America.
New York Times, Wall Street Journal. Yep,
exactly. How do you think that'll change? What impact do you think that'll have on a consumer's access to sports information?
Well, I don't know about you, but I don't mind paying for the best stuff. I understand that you can't run the Globe and Mail, the New York Times, the National Post for free. You have to get money in, and the situation in the last 5 years is untenable. They cannot continue to go the way they're going. The big problem everybody has is, well, I don't mind paying, but I don't want to be the only guy paying. I don't want to find out that the five guys down my street are all getting it for free, and yet I'm being a good citizen and paying for it.
Right.
So I think the fact that we're moving towards almost everybody going towards a paywall will get us there, and will help the industry, and will help us support people who are good reporters and good information gatherers. I know that sounds self-serving because I work for mainstream media, but I really think a lot of people feel that way. Now, if the cost is too much, if they want to charge $50 a month just to access the website, well, people might get a little bit put off. But I'd like to see something like, you know, iTunes, that kind of a source where you could go to get everything aggregated. You'd pay, let's say, $40 or $50 a month, and you could get every magazine and newspaper in the world, quality magazine and newspaper in the world. I think that would be a really good development and a way to do it. But there's no doubt about it. For people who've had free for so long, that's about to end.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Bruce Daubigan of the Globe and Mail. Bruce, we've spent, obviously, months ad nauseum talking about this lockout, so we are looking forward to the World Juniors, which start on Boxing Day in Ufa, Russia. What do you expect the ratings are going to look like for that tournament, especially given the time difference between North America and Russia?
Well, the live games, I believe, will come on in Winnipeg, most of them starting at 3 in the morning.
That's right.
Where I live in Calgary, 2 in the morning, 4 in the morning in Eastern Canada. I think you're going to see that those numbers will not be great. A lot of people will PVR them, and it's hard to find to get a rating off of PVR. I do think that the replays later in the day will get a good number, but certainly this is a bit of a hair shirt for TSN. You know, to have the Calgarys and to have the Ottawas and other cities where we've had the juniors, to have those and the profits you made, once in a while you got to sort of, as I say, put on the hair shirt and have something from Russia in the middle of the night. So it's going to affect them, but I still think there'll be a lot to talk about. And certainly with the NHL, you know, out of commission, you're definitely going to see people interested in it.
If you're CBC, Bruce, do you read into this at all for the Olympic ratings coming in 2014?
Well, it's not going to. I mean, you know, we've seen this coming down the pike in terms of Sochi, that we knew what the time frame would be. Now they'll do a little bit more to put the events into times that we can see. I think Ufa, where they're having the juniors, is even further east than is Sochi. I believe it's another time zone or two. But the Olympic people understand that they have to serve the North American market as best they can, and so presumably they'll push events into the morning time, at least where we can see it in normal morning viewing. But again, if you want to have international events and you want to have worldwide customers and people buying in around the world, you got to give them a chance once in a while to host the event and have it in their time zone. And as I say, this is just one of those times when North America is going to have to pay the price for not being in the time zone or close to the time zone where the Olympics are.
You're right. Ufa is 12 hours, ahead of us, and Sochi is 10 hours ahead of us.
10, yeah, 2 hours. There you go. We learned something.
Yeah, there you go.
Drew's an air traffic controller in his spare time.
No, I'm just Brian Williams. I was taught by Brian Williams. I know what time it is everywhere.
Bruce, final question here, and we're going to need some of your sports media expertise. We're a hockey show. What the heck are we going to talk about if the NHL cancels a second season in about 8 years?
I got two words for you guys. Good luck. you know what? Certainly the World Juniors will take you through the middle of January or to early January. After that, it's going to be pretty... Well, you know, I worked through the last lockout. I was working in the 1994 lockout. It's not easy. And I think this one has fundamentally changed the relationship of the league to its broadcasters and its sponsors and its clients. I think the fallout from this one is going to be monumental compared to the other two. That doesn't help you guys with what you're doing, but I suppose you can follow the juniors and you can maybe try to follow some of the guys playing in the KHL. But by and large, you're going to have to be creative, boys.
Bruce, what I've been telling these guys is we should just get in a car and, you know, drive an hour and a half west and go check out a Wheat Kings game. I love the WHL, so I'm sure, you know, if you're a hockey fan, you'll find a way to get through it, right?
Well, one of the things I've never really quite understood, because we've seen now with the WHL going to Vancouver, Calgary, and Edmonton again, why it is we don't have junior closer to Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
It's a very good question. I think a lot.
You think it would be a market? I mean, you guys love hockey.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And especially for the NHL is outpriced. It seems like that's a bit of a no-brainer, yet there's really been nothing along those lines bandied about at all.
Yeah, the Vancouver Giants, the Edmonton Oil Kings, the Calgary Hitmen, they're very popular and extremely successful. And you'd think maybe that the Jets might run the junior team the way it's done in Calgary, because it's a source of income for them even when they're locked out.
And that makes perfect sense, and we've wondered the same thing. So only time will tell on that one, I guess.
You guys can carry that ball.
Bruce Dowbiggin from the Globe and Mail. Bruce, as always, thanks very much for your time.
Okay, boys, happy holidays.
You too, Bruce. Thanks a lot, Bruce.
Take care, bye.
But take care. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Bruce Dowbiggin of the Globe and Mail for having joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, you can download it either on iTunes or on the TSN 1290 website. Just search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get a sent to your iPod each and every week via iTunes. It's the easiest way to go about it. Did you guys watch that concert at all this week? Because, I mean, Timmy's playing Foo Fighters right now, so it...
1-2-1-2. I couldn't figure out which channel it was on.
1-2-1-12-12-12.
No. Whatever. I mean, what channel was it on, though?
It was on AMC and Bloomberg here in Winnipeg.
Bloomberg?
Yes. It's a financial channel. You've probably never seen it.
I have so much money, I don't know what to do with it.
That's what I was thinking.
I mean,
exactly.
I don't need to... Yeah. I pay someone, Drew, to manage my money.
You pay somebody to watch Bloomberg for you, isn't that right?
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
And then that person tells the other guy.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I saw a bit of it on YouTube. I watched Born to Run with Springsteen and Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi sucks. And
you don't like Bon Jovi?
I thought he was pretty lousy. I mean, I didn't need him to come out. I didn't think he added anything to Born to Run there.
Nothing. He didn't add anything to Born to Run. And especially because a couple years ago... at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, they had Billy Joel do Born to Run with Bruce Springsteen, and that was way better.
I got a lot of, I was watching the concert, and Billy Joel came out, and I tweeted out, is that Billy Joel or Alan Walsh? And that got a lot of publicity.
Yeah, they kind of look the same.
Yeah,
that was a funny tweet.
I'm not sure Alan Walsh has good-looking women like Billy Joel's had.
Like
in his
Christy
life,
Brinkley?
But, yeah, but, and I watched, was it the Stones?
Yeah, the Stones played two songs.
Yeah, so I watched a little bit of that, and then there was...
Paul McCartney's going to be doing Nirvana songs?
No, he did that at the concert.
No, apparently also...
Oh, really?
No, also, like, yeah, ongoing, I had read something, saw that.
But that's where they first... He came out with Dave Grohl and...
Oh, that's what it was, okay.
And they played Nirvana songs.
Was this concert planned in advance, or was it, you know, just random, like...
Rarely do you just get random superstars to show up for a concert at Madison Square Garden.
I don't know.
It was a concert in support of Hurricane Sandy.
People were tweeting about... Oh, was it?
Yeah,
okay,
it was in support of Hurricane Sandy. So
that's good.
Yeah, it was all these sort of... A lot of artists that are synonymous with the New Jersey, New York area.
Springsteen, Bon Jovi.
Exactly. Yeah. Alicia Keys.
Did the Wu-Tang Clan perform?
She's awesome. I like Alicia Keys.
No, the Wu-Tang Clan did not perform.
Okay. Well,
Kanye West was there.
Okay, Kanye, Jay-Z.
Wasn't very good.
Yeah,
he was wearing a leather skirt for some reason.
I've worn those before.
Kanye West was wearing a leather skirt.
I've seen Kanye live before. He was in Chicago. He's a good show.
It was outside. It wasn't the ideal audience for Kanye. It was more a Billy Joel audience.
How many songs did Bruce play?
Bruce played, I think, 3 or 4 to kick it off.
Okay.
So for him, that's just a little appetizer.
I didn't see him come. I watched the whole thing, and then I fell asleep just before the end of it.
Raised a lot of money. Heard a bit of it on the radio.
Well, the best part is Brian Williams, NBC News. Yeah. Brian Williams is in the back of it.
Good sense of humor.
Very good sense of humor. Very funny if you ever see him on one of the late night shows.
Yeah, he is.
And right after The Who finished performing, he's in the back saying, "Wow, wasn't that an incredible performance? Have you ever seen Keith Moon look that good?" Keith Moon's been dead for about... I'd say 30 years.
Like he
meant Roger Daltrey, and he said Keith Moon instead. It was a little bit awkward.
I thought he might have meant Keith Richards.
Well, no, that would have made sense as well. But
Roger Waters was there too, right?
Yeah, Roger Waters was there.
The Pink Floyd guys were there.
Yeah. Anyways, it was an interesting concert.
No, and I like Zeppelin. Pink Floyd to me,
it's a Gilmore Waters thing, right? That's awesome.
I never got Pink Floyd. Like, to me, it's just, you listen to it and it's boring. But
more Gilmore than Waters.
Again, I'm more of a hip-hop guy.
Yeah.
So, a hip-hop popper, gangbanger. Anyways.
Wow.
let's
talk about the injuries. You know, we mentioned this earlier.
How do you transition from that?
I don't know. Speaking of segues. Ryan Kesler is still months away from coming back to the Vancouver Canucks. We're going to make some assumptions. Let's assume the season starts January 15th, give or take. Are the Canucks in some serious trouble without Kesler?
Yeah, they are, Richie, because Ryan Kesler, as we all know, was a huge part of their run to the Stanley Cup against the Boston Bruins 2 years ago.
He wasn't the same player last year.
No, he was injured. In the playoffs, he was clearly injured. And, you know, he didn't have a very good year last year during the regular season, because remember, the year before was his career year and he had, you know, I think 80 points. But, you know, Ryan Kesler opened up the game for the Sedins. And remember, I mean, Kesler was arguably a Conn Smythe candidate that year. Mm-hmm. Tim Thomas won it. But, you know, the way he was playing, people were making arguments that, you know, Ryan Kesler could have won it. Similar to, you know, the way a guy like Keith Primo or Scott Stevens was playing, just, you know, going all out, and or even a Dustin Brown. But, you know, this is a serious injury. And it was interesting, you know, I believe they talked to his doctor, I believe, and they reevaluated him. But then they interviewed... was it Mike Gillis? They interviewed him, and they weren't sure that he was going to come back. But
here's the quote from his agent.
Oh, sorry, it was his agent.
Yeah.
Sorry.
The reevaluation, so they reevaluated him after all the surgeries. The reevaluation was positive in that the surgeries were successful. However, the compounding nature of both of those surgeries, both the wrist and the shoulder surgeries, being on the same side of the body, it's been very hard to properly rehab either one of them, particularly the shoulder.
You know, you have that, and you have not only that, you have Alex Edler's back issues, which are apparently flaring up.
Yep.
Then you have the goalie issue, and you're really not going to get much for Luongo as you would for a guy like Schneider. So you trade Luongo, which allegedly is basically done to Toronto so long as the cap doesn't preclude that from happening, based on their estimations. Anyhow, you look at Vancouver, then what do you have? You lose a goalie, you don't probably get much back for him. You lose your second line center, who you match up against the other team's best players to allow you to freely use Sedin up the middle. And then you have guys like Malhotra. You just traded Hodgson, so you trade Hodgson with the idea that Kessler will be able to play. So you have no Hodgson. You have Malhotra's more a four guy and face off guy. Can't really create much offense. Takes a lot of defensive zone draws. You got Sedin. You're trying to free up. You don't have Kessler. You still have the wing question that you've really never been able to fill, especially those second line wing spots.
That's why they wanted Shane Doan.
Yeah, and you have injuries on that. You have the Edler injury that's just questionable. Is your defense that good? You don't really have a ton of prospects. That window.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has it closed?
No, not yet.
It's not closed.
Not
but
yet.
It's closing.
You've got a young core still. The core is pretty. It's not young, but it's a good. It's a good age.
The Sedins aren't young anymore.
Well, no. They're 32. That's not old.
No, but I mean, hey, as you can do it. But do you need to have the young guys coming through? And do you? Is Cassian going to be what you want? Is Schrader going to be what you want? You know, how many other guys you got? You're drafting the bottom first round all the time. They haven't really drafted that particularly well. So short season, if you can get Kessler back for a playoff run and he's fresh, different story. But will he be healthy? Will he be the same player?
I wouldn't say they haven't drafted well, because if you look at all these guys, these are guys that they drafted. But I think
when was the last top pick they had who came up? I mean, Edler was probably their best draft pick recently, was it not?
Yeah.
Schrader's a pretty good player. They're expecting him to be good. But
You
can't say if that's a bad pick.
I think it's
Hodgson. They traded Hodgson because they obviously wanted Cassian, who was...
I don't know. They traded Hodgson to get rid of him. He was that much of a problem in that organization.
I'm just saying, I don't think the Canucks have drafted bad. That's my opinion.
Get me wrong. With a good core, and you have a good goalie, a great goalie, and Schneider you have some good players. But Burrows isn't as young as you think either. Those guys are all over 30, that top line. Burrows and the Sedins. Okay, so who are you looking at the next line? Looking at Kesler?
The American Exchange line was Chris Higgins, Mason Raymond, and Kesler.
David Booth.
David Booth, Ryan Kessler, and
David Booth excites me if I need something to be hunted, but he doesn't excite me as a hockey player.
I like this game, but obviously concussion issues, and you know, can he put it all together? He's not a great passer. He's more of a stick handler shooter kind of guy. I mean, you're looking at a guy like Mason Raymond. Obviously, he had the huge back injury. He's a speedy guy, but what really is he? Can he be consistent enough to be a top six player? And who else did you mention? I don't have the roster right in front of me.
In that division,
Higgins is a third liner. I mean, come on.
In that division, you've got the Calgary Flames. You've got the Minnesota Wild. You've got the Edmonton Oilers. The Edmonton Oilers are only getting better.
All three are better.
But I still think the Vancouver Canucks are one of the top teams in the West.
Remus tells me that since 2008, Cody Hodgson is the only draft pick of theirs who has played in their lineup.
Well, Jordan Schrader will when he comes back.
Really, though? It's tiny. I mean, who knows what he is? I haven't followed him recently, but I know that when they picked him, there were some questions of character in Minnesota, and he's not a big guy. And then with the Moose, he wasn't that great. Obviously, he was still young. But I don't know what the expectations are for him.
And since 2006?
Yeah.
No, I don't know if this is right, so let's skip that one, sorry.
Okay, but so there you go. And, I mean, obviously it takes guys a while to develop and things like that, but you're drafting low, and maybe you're not drafting that well, and look at the team right now. So, where are they? They're in a chance to win, but they need Kessler.
They're still a good team in the Western Conference.
Oh, I don't disagree, Ezzy. Don't disagree. Well-coached playoff team. But are they a Stanley Cup contender? And that's the purpose of what you do.
Since 2006...
I would say they are.
Since 2006, the only players who've played on the team regularly... Well, the only players who've played that of draft picks are Grabner, Hodgson, and you can add Sergei Shirokov to that list. That's not a great record.
Okay, but if you go further back, Corey Schneider was the first...
But you're going back...
Why are we going only back to 2006?
That's 6 years.
6 years.
Okay, but I mean, the guys,
if they're going to make the team, they're going to play in your lineup.
Well, the guys that are playing for them now are the guys that were drafted before 2006, so you have to factor that in.
But you have to replenish your stock at some point in time, and they haven't been able to do that.
You got big gaps.
Yeah, but they've also when you're a team that's full of veterans, you're obviously and you have late draft picks. That's going to affect. Okay,
no, the Red Wings have managed.
Oh, sure,
their draft picks
haven't been good.
Red
since
Wings had a lull, and that was an issue for them. They've replenished. Thomas Tatar.
I can't argue
players.
With that.
Nyquist.
Their draft picks since 2006 haven't been good.
It'd be a very interesting team to watch. Look closer to home. Zach Bogosian, of course, he had his wrist surgery at the end of August, and last week the surgical screw was removed from his wrist. And now he's able to really go into a full rehab mode.
Like you, Drew. He's got a screw loose.
Very clever.
I mean, the season without him is to me, I mean, who knows? In a half season, anything can happen. Look at Minnesota last year. I mean, they were overrated, and they had a great goaltending. And, you know, it tanked because you can't withstand that for an entire year. But without Zach Bogosian, the Jets are not a playoff team. With Zach Bogosian, you can argue that they are. But without him, they aren't.
When he had his surgery, it was expected to be a 4 to 6 month recovery period. Mid-January would be 4 months. So, I mean, who knows, you know, how quick... we don't know how quickly he's recovered and everything else, but... You know, he is young enough that doesn't have that much wear and tear on him relative to a guy like Ryan Kessler who's played, you know, Ryan Kessler's probably played an extra season given all the playoff games and everything along those lines over the course of his career.
And the way he plays.
And the way he plays.
But he also was playing with the injury, and I think that a guy like Kessler, he probably should have called it a season last year. And
were the first overall seed in the West. How can you throw in the towel?
Well, I mean,
and he's
throwing in a towel because then you save yourself for the following season.
But he's damned if he does, and damned he's really damned either way. He, you know, because nobody thought that the Canucks were going to lose to the Kings, and then if he throws in the towel, he's persona non grata for not, you know, gritting through his injuries or some nonsense like that, when it was obvious that. He was ineffective come the playoff time.
And that's a Sedin injury too.
That's right.
You cannot mention.
Yeah, of course you had the Sedin injury that also affected it. It'll just be interesting. I mean, you got those two guys. I mean, some other guys who are a little bit banged up. Marian Hossa has been medically cleared from the concussion,
which means
he's now officially locked out and not getting paid anymore. God bless
That hit last year. I think we were actually in Kentucky for your wedding when that happened.
You would have been at least on the way there. Yeah. I don't know if you would have been there.
That
yet.
Hit.
You would have passed in the back.
I don't
of the
think
car.
I've seen a hit that bad since the Lindros hit certain hits like that. I mean, Hossa. You hope that he's coming back, but he and like Chris Pronger, he was having some huge problems. With, you know, like simple things like Crosby even was having with the lighting and just listening to music and stuff like that. So hopefully Hossa is going to be good if the NHL season gets started again. But that hit, that really, I know that from following that he was really negatively affected by that, but hopefully he can come back. It's always good to hear that these guys are on schedule as opposed to not being on schedule.
Well, and the last one is Jake Gardner of the playing for the Marlies, who's expected to be a key member of the Leafs blue line.
Great young defenseman.
He's out with concussion-like symptoms, but for some reason they're not calling it a concussion.
I hate when they do that.
I know, it's obnoxious. Anyways, let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we have one final hour here on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our Instagram is at Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Still to come this hour, Elliot Friedman from CBC's Hockey Night in Canada is going to be joining us. We'll talk some CBA-related lockout stuff with Elliot. A quick tweet coming from Sunaya Sapurji, the junior hockey editor at Yahoo Sports, reporting that Jake Patterson will be Team Canada's third goaltender in the World Junior Hockey Championships, and Malcolm Subban and Jordan Binnington will be Canada's top two goaltenders for the upcoming World Junior Hockey Championship. That comes from head coach Steve Spott via the Twitter feed of Sunaya Sapurji.
That's good news. We know that because we weren't sure which goalies were going to start.
It's like they knew what we were talking about, and then they're providing us with that information. It's very considerate of them, if you ask me.
NHL news and notes.
Some weeks there's enough things that we can have some news and notes. Some weeks there aren't. Let's start with the rankings of the most influential people in sports business. Gary Bettman cracks that list at number 15. For the commissioner of one of the supposed big four sports, mm-hmm. Are you surprised at how low down on that list he is? This is Sports Business Journal's list of the 50 most influential people in sports business.
I'm not, and as you may disagree, I'm not, only because NHL's kind of fallen off the radar there. So, I mean, like, overall, I mean, it's just kind of fallen off the radar. It's again, back to the same old story, and it's not as relevant. And I don't think his power, I think when the value of the league and the attention to the league has gone down, I don't think your power is a top 10 power. I agree with that ranking. I think that's about fair.
And, Richie, when you see that the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell's there, Bud Selig is there, and then, you know, Bettman's at 15 or whatever he was at, it shows you that it kind of puts things in perspective, because the NHL is the fourth most popular, you know, league in the U.S. And, you know, looking at this list, you know, that you had the owners of the Kings there, and you had other guys, television executives ahead of Gary Bettman. You know, Gary Bettman's, you know, influential. But what about the fact that, you know, the NHL is taking all of their leads from the NFL and NBA lockouts? That kind of tells you that, you know, they're trying to emulate themselves off of those leagues.
Sure.
And, you know, we all know Gary Bettman. He used to work for the NBA, and he obviously is friends with David Stern and all that. But it kind of makes sense. I mean, he probably wishes he was a little bit more influential, but I think Gary Bettman has done a lot of good things for the NHL, but I think that he isn't considered, maybe he isn't as well thought of maybe because of the lockouts. You know, he's been the NHL commissioner for mm-hmm. 20 years, but because of those lockouts, that's, you know, tarnished his reputation a little bit. And that's maybe why he isn't a little bit higher in this list.
And interesting to note that in terms of the top-ranked hockey-related executives or influential people, it's Philip Anschutz and Tim Lewicki.
Yep.
They're both, one's the owner, one's the CEO of AEG, which owns the Los Angeles Kings, which is up for sale.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. You know, really, if you take those guys out of the picture, the most influential hockey person isn't until number 15 on that list, and that's Gary Bettman. Also on that list, number 19 is Donald Fehr, obviously executive director of the NHLPA. Ed Snyder, number 43. You know him from the Philadelphia Flyers, and he's the chairman of Comcast Spectator. And at number 46, Bill Daly and Bob Batterman, you know, who we have heard ad nauseum mm-hmm. about throughout the course of this lockout. It's sort of an interesting, granted arbitrary,
yep.
but an interesting list in terms of how the NHL is perceived south of the border.
It is interesting because, you know, you see that the hockey news used to produce the top 100 most influential people in hockey, but it's interesting to see how they're, they stack up against the, you know, the NFL, the NBA, because the NFL is such a bigger beast than the NHL, and even
it's a bigger beast than any of the other ones.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see how, you know, they still make the lead. It's like you see this list and you're like, okay, at least the NHL and the NHLPA are on there somewhere.
That's right.
City Council in Edmonton, and Daryl Cates, the owner of the Edmonton Oilers, are getting back to the negotiating table after, really, for lack of a better word, Daryl Cates sort of threw a hissy fit a number of months ago. Is Cates lucky that they're still willing to listen to him?
Well, I still think it helps that... Lucky? I don't necessarily think lucky. He'd be lucky if they give him any more of a sweetheart deal. And you can always talk. Never hurts to talk. Never hurts to entertain possibilities. But yeah, lucky if they give him any more of a sweetheart deal and he tries to go back to the well once.
And apparently, you know, I was just reading this again. I just wanted to check. Apparently, Edmonton City Council is also considering building an arena with their own money and running it or something like that.
You should talk to his cousin, Stephen Mandel.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no relation between the mayor of Edmonton, that's Stephen Mandel, and myself, Mindell. We do spell and pronounce our names differently.
You're both the same age, though.
That's true, exactly. We're both in our 50s. Be a little bit interesting to see how that.
It's no fun when Drew makes fun of himself with the age jokes.
It's like Eminem when he, at the end of what's that movie?
Eight Mile.
When he kind of makes fun of himself before other people make fun of him.
Yeah, you take the fun. You take back the night is really what you do.
That's right. I'm taking over the joke and I'm owning the joke as opposed to letting it be
you own that joke and then
Drew actually used to walk 8 Mile to school when he was a young boy.
All the way uphill. President Obama was on Minneapolis's WCCO TV earlier this week.
True.
The channel we all get.
By the way, does Obama do Letterman busy or something? He's doing little television stations in Minneapolis.
Weird too.
You know, like WCCO in Minneapolis. Is that really like the president goes on there?
I talked to Drew about putting a request in for Obama this week, but alas, we weren't successful.
No, unfortunately, I don't know why, but I think it's just. Considering that most of my experience regarding the White House comes from the West Wing, the TV show,
or the White House on Grant.
That too, yeah. I believe I recall Jed Bartlett doing various interviews with sort of local TV stations. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, he made the following
quote.
That
wasn't real life, though, Drew.
No, I'm aware of that. My message to owners and to players is you guys make a lot of money, and you make a lot of money on the backs of fans, so do right by your fans. You can figure out how to spread out a bunch of revenue that you're bringing in, but do right by the people who support you. And I shouldn't have to be involved in a dispute between really wealthy players and even wealthier owners. They should be able to settle this themselves and remember who it is that's putting all that money in their pockets. I'm just glad he acknowledged that he has better things to do than deal with this nonsense.
Thank God, yeah.
Yeah.
Good for him for saying that, but people have been saying that this entire time.
That's right.
It's funny, even when the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, says that, it's like, you know what? Unfortunately, that's still not going to break the stalemate.
They don't care. They wouldn't even
hear that. It's funny. He's right, and good for him for saying that, but I think we and other people have been saying that the entire time, and unfortunately, I don't think anybody's listening. But
wait, he did bring a playoff to the BCS for college football, so there's hope.
I think he cares a little bit more about college football than he does the NHL. That's he's never showed up because he's shown up to Washington Wizards games.
He's a basketball fan.
He's a basketball guy. Yeah. He's never showed up to a Capitals game, and they're all like, "Is he ever going to come to a Capitals game?" And
it's funny because neither did Ovechkin last year.
Yeah, that's clever. Exactly. That's interesting how that worked out. Mark Cuban, owner of the Dallas Cowboys,
you know who is a big Capitals fan?
Dallas Mavericks.
Wolf Blitzer.
Really?
Wolf Blitzer. Really?
Huge Capitals fan. Yeah.
And isn't Pat Sajak also?
Yeah. Sajak was at a Winnipeg game.
I know, because I think he's a...
When Pat Sajak came to Winnipeg when the Capitals played, and Remus went up to Pat Sajak and said, "Where's Vanna?"
That didn't happen. And can I buy a vowel? That would have been funnier. Mark Cuban chimed in on the NHL lockout as well this week.
I love it, like one quote becomes a story because nobody has anything to write about.
Isn't Mark Cuban busy appearing on Shark Tank?
Apparently not busy enough to to chime in on the NHL lockout. You know, he's a Pittsburgh guy originally.
That's true. He tried to buy the Pirates way back in the day.
That's right. Are you surprised that Mark Cuban isn't...
And he looked at their pitching and decided not to proceed.
Are you surprised that Mark Cuban hasn't had his name bandied about NHL teams more often?
Well, there was a rumor about Pittsburgh way back in the day. He hasn't wanted to touch it, though.
Right.
I mean, he had the option of basically buying the Stars and having them in the arena with him.
Mm-hmm. And then the Phoenix Coyotes actually showed up on an episode of Shark Tank.
Yeah.
And Mark Cuban said, I'm out.
And he looked at the Dallas books, and they disintegrated in his hands, and he said, forget this.
Yeah. It's just and that's a guy that the NHL would probably want to bring under their umbrella. He certainly knows how to create media attention.
He would raise profile. He'd be great, but I don't think
actually, Richie, you mentioned Pittsburgh. I think Dallas, well, obviously, I remember when Dallas, because Dallas recently got a new owner, I think he was part of an ownership group or something.
You really need to listen closer. Richie just said that.
Oh, yeah, I did say that.
You said Pittsburgh.
And he said Dallas.
Oh, you say Dallas after that?
It's funny because when Cuban put in an offer for an NHL team, it was actually Dominicans.
Ah, like the Seinfeld episode. Yeah. You wouldn't be on what's the guy's name? The Texan guy that Kramer is negotiating with.
I forget.
You wouldn't be passing off Dominicans on.
Rivas, pull that up.
Yeah. Well, the workers are getting uneasy, and you know who they go after? El Presidente.
El Presidente, exactly. All right, let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to do rapid fire a little bit earlier, and then Elliot Friedman of CBC's Hockey Night in Canada is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also follow us on Instagram at Illegal Curve.
You're just plugging that Instagram. No,
well, you guys told me to plug it.
You haven't taken a picture on Instagram yet, like you said you would.
It's true.
I uploaded a picture from today. You can see Drew in a suit.
Oh, well, there you go.
Drew's, where's it from? Hanford Druitt?
Do we have a Tumblr?
What's a Tumblr? Nobody does Tumblr.
I don't know what Tumblr is either.
We don't have a Tumblr.
Like nobody does High Five anymore. Nobody does Friendster. Nobody does MySpace. Nobody uses Netscape Navigator. Reem, you know what I'm talking about.
Tumblr is actually pretty popular.
Is it?
I just don't know what it's for.
What about Flickr?
I have started it.
What about Pinterest?
I still don't
know
what that
is. Nobody has any interest in Pinterest.
I don't think so. There's also, what's the other one? Google Plus? That one fell off pretty quick.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
nobody was on that.
Okay, I hear.
Rapid Fire. Doing rapid fire a little bit earlier today with Elliot Friedman coming up after this segment. 15-year-old Erie Otters forward Connor McDavid is reportedly on the verge of signing an endorsement deal with Reebok.
It's funny because as he signed the McChicken to a negotiation deal,
a 15-year deal.
Yeah. If he signs the deal, he will be the youngest person to sign an endorsement deal with the company, with Reebok.
I hope so. I hope they haven't signed an 11-year-old.
Seriously.
What age, if any, is too young for a player to sign an endorsement contract with a company?
15 years old.
Yeah, it's really creepy.
Well, you know what? Like, I mean, Connor McDavid is... I was watching him, the highlights yesterday. He plays for the Erie Otters, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
He's a really good player, and he's one of only three players to get an exemption, along with John Tavares and Aaron Ekblad. And I believe that this other guy, Sean Day, might get an exemption, but...
That would be for next year, I think.
That's for next year. But it's clear, Richie, that Connor McDavid is a very exceptional talent. Now, you can't compare him to Crosby yet, but they are. But he's good. And you know that he's only going to get better. He has 42 points, I think, for the Otters. I mean, it's ridiculous. For a 15-year-old, he's going to get 110 points this year. It's unheard of.
Yeah.
But he's 15 years old. I mean, when I was 15 years old...
Don't even go there.
I could barely dress myself.
Now, not much has changed.
Not much has changed
in 15 years, let me tell you.
Exactly. So, I mean, 15 years old is pretty early, but... pardon me, pretty young. But if his parents believe that they can manage this endorsement deal, you know...
Yeah, it's true,
but it seems pretty early.
It is what it is. I mean, you know what? The parents, he's 15, his parents will handle this. Do I think it's too young? Yeah, but I mean, this is what the kids do. This is what they do with LeBron James. This is what they're going to keep doing. The question is how young, and you asked that, Drew, and it's a good question. I think this is basically already too young. I can understand what they're doing from this perspective, that marketing stuff, but, you know, the problem you get is when you get younger than that, I mean, who really knows where you're going to be in a couple years?
Sure.
So
it is worth noting that as soon as he started playing in the OHL, he, of course, lost any U.S. college eligibility he would ever have.
Sponsors,
he was considered a professional as soon as he started playing with the Erie Otters.
And Andrew, with Crosby, they waited till he was 18. So I'm not sure why they can't just wait. Like, it seems like they, you know, I guess they're deciding to start earlier. And
for the record, by the way, unless you're under the age of 15, if you... ask a 15-year-old for an autograph, you're creepy. I think that's... anybody disagreeing with me on that?
No, but the reality is, I mean, and Remus and I saw this when we were at the draft in St. Paul, and then when the Jets, you know, came back and everything, what a lot of guys do, these autograph guys for the most part are older. What they do is they get a kid to get the autograph for them.
Well,
and so you'll see a lot of guys try to get Connor McDavid's autograph, the older guys.
Yeah.
Well, for Connor McDavid, everyone's older than him. But, you know, so they'll try to get younger kids to get it. So, yeah, it is, I mean, you got to realize that these kids are 15 years old and that's young to be asking them for an autograph. So I guess this is the day and age we live in, though.
This question of Rapid Fire is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty, as it deals with real estate.
Sure.
Britney Spears has purchased Russ Cortnell's house in Thousand Oaks, California. We don't know the purchase price, but the house was initially listed for a cool $8.5 million.
I think Gretz lives in Thousand Oaks.
I think so.
That's
well,
just half a mil under what Richie paid for his condo.
That's true.
True.
What is your most vivid memory of Russ Cortnell's playing career?
So you opened up a can of worms, Drew, because you asked me about a Russ Cortnell memory. Now, first is the trade. The 97 trade deadline deal when he went from Vancouver.
New York?
To New York. Now, yeah. Who was in that deal?
Ugh.
Remus, I know who's in the deal. It was Russ Cortnell and Esa Tikkanen for Brian Noonan and Sergei Nemchinov.
Nice. Yep.
That's what the deal was. And then Cortnell came, and I think he rode shotgun with Gretz and Tikkanen for a while there in that 97 run to the conference finals. He was a great skater.
Yep.
Far less annoying than his brother.
Fast.
Yeah, far less annoying than his brother. Great skater. He meshed well with Gretz. Gretz made a great button hook pass to him in a game against the Devils, which caught Scott Stevens off guard. I remember if he scored, though, on Berdur, but he had a great run. That's my memory of Russ Cortnell. I didn't like him when he played against the Jets with Vancouver before that.
Mm-hmm.
That's my Russ Cortnell memory.
Yeah, Russ Cortnell played
He won a cup in 86, didn't he?
No.
With the Habs?
He never won a cup, I don't think.
The Habs didn't win 86?
No, he was on the Leafs.
Yeah, because Richie started the Leafs, then went to the Habs, then he went to a bunch of teams.
When was he in the Habs, Rim?
He was on the Stars for a couple of years.
Yeah, he was on the Habs from 88 to 92.
He left the year before.
Cup both ways, 86,
yeah, 93. He left the year before. My favorite memory, to be honest with you, was probably, I mean, he had a lot of good seasons. He played over 1,000 games. Cortnell, probably my best memory is actually when he was playing with his brother in Vancouver for a couple of years.
Jeff Cortnell was so annoying.
But it was nice. I remember there was the old hockey card with Cortnell brothers on. But they were both really good. So it's probably when they played together in Vancouver.
Bunch of hockey-related books are available if you're looking to do some Christmas shopping. We had Jamie McLennan on last week talking about his.
I still haven't got my book in the mail. I ordered it on Amazon like 2 weeks ago, and I haven't got it yet.
Just support local companies, I think.
Yeah, you should. Sean Pronger, of course,
had
a book.
I do support local companies, too.
Jonathan Gatehouse, who we interviewed on the show, he has a book about...
No, we never interviewed him. Remus had him on the Run Around Table.
We listened to an interview on the way to Minneapolis.
Okay, sorry.
Your memory.
Anyways,
oh, God.
You're getting senile, dude.
I'm getting a little old. What can I tell you? A lot of great books is the point that are available on the
Journeyman.
Market for
I'm,
your...
I'm almost done that book.
That's good. What is your favorite hockey-related book of all time?
Ooh, of all time. That's a good question.
Roy McGregor's home team was great.
Read that.
Gretzky's autobiography.
The one with Rick Riley?
Yeah, it might be the best. My favorite one.
Never read that either.
Never read that.
You never read Gretzky's autobiography? Oh, it's fabulous.
Yeah, it's great. That might be my favorite one.
The hockey sweater?
The hockey sweater.
It's not a book.
Yeah.
Well, the hockey sweater is...
Who did it? Was it Munz who didn't know about that on your show, Rima?
It was on, I don't know.
Who? Somebody didn't know about the hockey sweater on
I think
that
it
show.
Was on after you guys on Saturday. I only heard about stuff. I don't know.
No. That's right.
Bible started bringing it up.
When they had the special edition after
I'm going to go with The Hobbit by J.R. Tolkien. You know what? I've got about 60 pages left in Journeyman by that book by Sean Pronger. I know Remus has already read it. It's a really good book.
That's
you
not
guys
all
read.
Time, though.
No, not all time. But that's pretty good. I'm going to go with, I mentioned this a few weeks ago, Blood Feud by Adrian Dater. It all talks about the whole Colorado Avalanche-Detroit Red Wings rivalry. I really like that because it kind of goes a little bit more in-depth. So I'm gonna go with that one.
You guys knew this question was coming as soon as you probably saw it. Former Columbus Blue Jackets president, general manager, and head coach Doug McLean is reportedly considering a run for the leadership of the Progressive Conservative Party of Prince Edward Island. Given his woeful stewardship of the Columbus Blue Jackets, what do you think his first party policy would be as leader of the Progressive Conservatives of Prince Edward Island?
Don't let any Russians into the country.
What?
Well, you basically say you wouldn't draft any Russians after Filatov and Zhirdev.
Right.
I don't know if he drafted Filatov.
He drafted Rick
but
Nash.
Zhirdev, I know he drafted Rick Nash, but he was basically saying you can't draft them because...
So he was the opposite of Mike Smith then.
Yeah, basically. No, jokes aside, are you surprised he's PC?
No, not I'm not.
That. What was that, Rim?
I have no doubts about that.
That, of course, being from your prediction that...
My political prediction's worth
what was his name again?
Time.
I don't remember his name. He was so
Michael Ignatieff. Remember Stefan Dion before him? Okay, let's not go down the liberal memory lane. Doug McLean, it looks like he's considering it. So, he's a well-known guy and why not? He probably will have.
I mean, I have no idea about any of his policies or anything. I'm just saying, right. Given his time as the Columbus Blue Jackets general manager, head coach, you know, given his track record of success, he might be in opposition for a while. Given you know, because he never did win anything in Columbus. Is
he
all
took the Florida Panthers to the Stanley Cup final, though.
That's true. He did
as a coach, and he was with Detroit, I believe, before that. So he had some success in his career. Columbus was a mess.
Steve Lowry, Scott Mellenby.
That's right.
That was that.
Bill Lindsay.
The fluke year when they got swept by
Ryan Skrudland.
They got swept. Wasn't it Uwe Krupp who scored in overtime?
Yeah, game four. In Florida.
I believe it was Uwe Drew. Uwe Krupp, not Uwe. It's pronounced Uwe.
It was Uwe.
No, it's Uwe.
It's Uwe.
Oh,
Uwe.
Remus has got my back after he threw me under the bus during the Vancouver Canucks draft segment.
Uwe Krupp.
I thought it was Uwe.
It's Uwe.
It's not Uwe.
Uwe.
The W in.
Sorry, I'm thinking of gooey, like gooey chocolate. Sorry, honest mistake.
Pretty sure he was the coach of the German team at the Olympics.
Yeah, I think he was.
Doug
McLean?
We were talking about gooey. Hold on, let's. We were talking about Uwe Krupp, and Drew said he thought about gooey chocolates.
Well, you know what's in line with these
tidbits. Please, NHL, NHLPA, end this lockout
end
now.
End this lockout now.
That's it for Rapid Fire. Let's go to break. We'll have our good friend Elliot Friedman coming up from CBC's Hockey Night in Canada. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 2:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website for your latest NHL, Winnipeg Jets, and CBA news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know him from CBC and Hockey Night in Canada, Elliot Friedman. Elliot, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Happy to do it.
Thanks very much. Elliot, we've been hearing a lot about the supposed drop-dead date in regards to getting a season underway. The NHL claims they don't have one. You know, in your estimation, what is the real drop-dead date?
Well, the last time the NHL canceled games, which was last Monday, they did consider canceling them all the way up until January 14th. I asked if that was true. I was told it was. And they just, after the NHLPA asked to bring mediation back into it, they just decided not to go that far. They figured it was better to, at that point anyway, to use the velvet glove as opposed to the metal hammer. So I have to guess that it's around that time, January 14th, January 15th, and that is about when they have to know that they're going to play. In 1995, when the NHL had a 48-game season, puck drop was January 20th. So if in the absence of knowing specifically when the date is, that's kind of the region.
Elliot, what do you think the NHLPA's kind of tossed out there that the term limits on contract is really going to affect the middle class? Do you kind of buy that argument?
I do. I do because I've done the math on it. When you look at it, the guys making the most money... if you look before the lockout, there were some $10 million guys. You know, Nicholas Lidstrom was one. Joe Sakic was one. There were $9 million guys. Bill Guerin was a $9 million guy, a few guys around there. And there aren't as many $9 million guys now. There's only one, Ovechkin. But there are a lot of guys making $7, $8. I mean, that really hasn't changed a lot. The big difference is if you look at where the salaries have risen, and a guy by the name of Tyler DeLoe did a great piece on this, was, you know, in the second liners, the third liners, the later pair defensemen. And if you bring down, if you go down to 50% and you bring down term limits, you're really going to crush that group of people. Now, the NBA found a way around that. They created veteran minimums, which were a little bit higher than the regular minimums. They also created what's called a mid-level cap exception, which allowed certain teams to go over the cap for certain players. But the NHL doesn't want to do that. And so I do see a situation where if you are a middle-of-the-road player, for lack of a better term, you could really get hurt. And the other thing is this. If you can argue for, let's say, an eight-year contract and the team battles you, you can come in at 5 or 6 and still be pretty happy. If the maximum is 5 years and the team fights with you, you're probably looking at maybe only 2 or 3, and that's not a lot of security. And that's a second reason if I was a player, I'd be really against it.
Elliot, you wrote about this earlier this week, and I found it really interesting. You wrote, and obviously I'm paraphrasing, but you wrote that it didn't look like either Gary Bettman or Bill Daly looked like a couple of guys who were about to win this current negotiation. Can you expand on what you wrote about?
Sure. When I was younger in life, and actually not too long ago, I was a really terrible negotiator. Like when it was coming down to negotiating my contracts, salary terms, things like that, vacation days, I was really awful at it. So I started to study, you know, what make good negotiators, and I started reading books about it. And one of the things that they really taught you to be a good negotiator is to read the body language and the expressions and just the overall facial appearance expressions of the people you're negotiating against. And it's been hard not to notice in this particular situation how rough the commissioner has looked at times. Like, he's never looked like this. And I'm not saying this because he's 60 years old and he's necessarily aging badly. I just think this whole thing has taken an enormous toll on him. I don't think he wants to cancel the season. I do think he's miscalculated at times, but he's run into an opponent that has frustrated him beyond belief. And Bill Daly is a guy, he is always calm in public. And at that press conference last Thursday when both he and Bettman blew up, and then earlier this week on Wednesday when he made the statement after the day of mediation, he just didn't look right. And if you look at the overall situation, guys, the league is going to win this on paper. They're going to get a 50-50 split. They're going to get term limits on contracts, though we're still arguing about what they are. It's a win for the league in both those situations. Yet, they don't look like two guys who are about to win. And for that reason, I'm kind of fascinated about what fear has done to them and what they think he still has up his sleeve.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Elliot Friedman of CBC. Elliot, you've been in New York for various times over the last few months as these negotiations have unfolded. Has the NHL lockout registered with the average New York sports fan at all?
Well, it's kind of funny you ask that. When we were there 2 weeks ago for the Board of Governors meetings, they were held at a law firm called Proskauer Rose, which represents the National Hockey League. And they didn't want us in the building, and they didn't want us, like, even on the building's property. So all of the reporters and all the camera people had to stand about 8 feet back from the doors and surround sort of that corner. Hmm. And people were coming up and stopping and looking at all the cameras. And they're like, who's in here? Who's inside? And we're like the NHL owners. And they were so disappointed. Like, it was such a look of crushing disappointment on their faces, like they were hoping for Brangelina or something like that. I think if you really look at it and you look to see, like, there's U.S. newspapers that cover this, papers from Pittsburgh, from Philadelphia, from New York, obviously. But they're not really, I've seen the L.A. Times travel one or two times to be there. But generally, papers from that far away aren't going. And I think what the really scary thing is for the league, that the only TV stations who are really covering it are Canadians. It's TSN, it's Sportsnet, it's ourselves at CBC, the NHL Network, which doesn't really count, even though it's based in the United States. Like, if you look at that kind of coverage, they're not getting anything. And that would be the kind of thing I would be really worried about.
In 2005, we heard a lot about how Harley Hotchkiss and Trevor Linden played a big role in ending the lockout and getting, you know, that deal done. Who do you think is really going to eventually get this deal done? Obviously, Gary Bettman and the Fear brothers, Bill Daly, they'll all be involved. Do you think there's going to be a similar players like there was in 2005 with Harley Hotchkiss and Trevor Linden?
Well, I think that has really been the big issue for the league, and that is that... the Fear brothers have really done their homework, and that is knowing that at times the league was able to, for lack of a better term, back-channel solutions in there, whether it was Harley Hotchkiss and Trevor Linden or Ted Saskin or somebody else. That doesn't exist this time because you've got Fear running the show, you've got his brother, and it's not like they're fighting siblings. They get along extremely well. As the number two, and, you know, a couple weeks ago, I was asking around to some people and saying, You know, if the Fear Brother, if the players were to throw out the Fear Brothers, you know, who closes the deal? And there isn't an easy answer there. I didn't really get one. And so part of me wonders, do you, when you're so close to the end of the season, and I do think at the end of the day, Bettman wants to play, do you want to throw the NHLPA into that much disarray that you kick Fear out and you have to do something else, too? It doesn't, I don't know if it makes a ton of sense to create that kind of chaos. So unless the players do toss them and find somebody else to close that deal for them, guys, I really don't know who it is, and I think that's been one of the NHL's problems, too.
From the PA perspective, it seems like the parties are so close, and obviously there's two sides to every story. If you're the players, are the next two paychecks, and maybe not coincidentally, you know, the 15th, and then cancel the games up to the 30th, be another another paycheck. Do you think the players are going to make enough, considering such a small discrepancy and how far the parties are apart? And there are some issues that will, you know, come to the forefront near the end. But do you think there's enough? It's worth kind of losing two paychecks to not get a deal done last week?
Well, I think that what it is was, I can't blame the players for getting upset last week because, I think your guy Ron Hainsey is absolutely right about one thing, and that is that those guys are not lawyers, and those guys are not paid negotiators. And, you know, the more I've had a chance to think about it, guys, the more I think what happened there was, if you look back to 2005, and I also wrote this in the column that you guys referenced earlier, the NHL won the cap, but they got clobbered on the small stuff. You know, they really didn't pay close attention to the tiny details. And that's where they lost control. And I think one of the reasons that Bettman is really gone for the jugular at times this time is that he knows he can't do that again. He's got his 50-50. He's getting his term limits. But he can't lose sight of some of the other small things. And I think he tried to do that to try to avoid the mistake. The problem is that, you know, hockey players are tough. They are bred to take the most ridiculous slight and turn it into motivation to win. I mean, the greatest team athlete I've ever seen, Michael Jordan, was like that. He would take the most ridiculous slight that was stupid, and he would turn that into a reason to kill you. And I think players are a bit like that, and they saw that, and it riled them up again. You know, I've written about this a little bit. I've talked about it on one radio station. I've been through something this year that makes me realize what it's like to be in the middle of a fight, and everybody outside looks at you and says you're crazy, but you're in the middle of it, and you don't care what anybody else thinks because you think that you're being pushed or disrespected. And, you know, I think that's what's happened here. I think that Fear has been emboldened by the anger of some of his players who feel disrespected, and I do think that's part of why we are where we are at this point.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Elliot Friedman of the CBC. Elliot, you mentioned Ron Hainsey in your previous answer. He's obviously been a sort of a focal point of a lot of anger, at least fan anger. You know, what has he done specifically to draw the ire of the NHL owners? And have you heard anything with regard to a deteriorating relationship between Ron Hainsey and the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, you know, I think that I've asked for specifics. I mean, I know you guys saw that piece I wrote on him last week.
Right.
And, you know, it was interesting. When I wrote it and I published it, I got some very interesting tweets from people in Winnipeg, fans in Winnipeg who were saying, I can't wait to boo this guy when he gets back. And I remember when I first did a piece on Donald Fear, I talked to Tom Glavin, who was always alongside Fear. And this is a guy who's going to the Hall of Fame. And he said that it cost him publicly in Atlanta for a while, and he was bitter about it. So I'm not surprised that people feel that way. I've asked for specifics. I have not been given them. I think it's possible that some of that is in the emotion of the moment and the fact that he is willing to stand up to some very powerful people and say no. I've had some people tell me it's more than that, but they won't tell me specifically what it is. I mean, you know, Hainsey is a guy who is, you know, as he said to me, he understands how the market works. He sat there on July, like every GM will tell you, the most dangerous mistake they can make is the panic move. Like you strike out in your primary target, so you go out and you give a big contract to somebody else. And that happened to Ron Hainsey this summer. The Atlanta Thrashers lost out on on Brian Campbell, and they couldn't get another guy, and they went and they gave Ainsley a big deal. And as he said, that's the way the market works. And he wants to fight hard and preserve that. And I think in a couple of weeks we'll find out if he was on the right side or not.
Elliot, earlier you mentioned, you know, the term limit on contracts. The NHL wants five years, obviously 7 years for their own players. But when the new CBA finally gets resolved, when it comes to hot stove discussions and people like us talking about trades and all that, is it going to be anticlimactic, you know, as it relates to player movement if there's term limits on contracts?
I don't necessarily think so. I think it might be easier to make trades, to be perfectly honest, guys. You know, to me, the term limit battle is all about franchise values, and or a lot of it is about franchise values. And when I tried to figure out why Bill Daly was so adamant about the 5 years, mm-hmm. you know, I was pointed to Tampa Bay, and the Lightning got sold for $110 million with the arena, and that's pretty low for a sports franchise. Mm-hmm. And someone said to me, look what Vincent LeCavalier's contract was at the time. And he had 10 years remaining and $75 million. And the New Jersey Devils are in the middle of a terrible financial situation that they're trying to sort out at a time when Ilya Kovalchuk has 13 years left on his deal, and I think it's $88 million. And, you know, if you don't have that, number one, it's easier to sell your teams. And number two, it's easier to make trades. And I think that might even perk up the gossip. And I'll tell you guys something else, too, is that in our business, people cannot get enough of trade rumors. Mm-hmm. As you guys know, mm-hmm. you could make up a trade rumor in the moment I get off the phone involving the Winnipeg Jets, and whether it's right or wrong, you guys could fill up the next 6 hours of Sports Radio Winnipeg on that trade rumor. That is never going away.
Elliot's exactly right, because I've been on MLB trade rumors here during the interview, making sure, seeing if the Blue Jays have pulled the trigger on a deal, and you're exactly right, because that is the landscape as it is. Final question, Elliot, we'll let you go on this. Don't mean to be overly dramatic, but I think the question may need to be asked. If the season does get canceled, does Gary Bettman return as commissioner when the NHL eventually resumes?
I think there's going to be a big debate about Bettman's future, whether or not the season gets canceled. And I think that's why he's one of the reasons he looks as stressed as he has at times. You know, he knows that. There's a big argument here. Like some people say, "Oh, he's only doing the owner's bidding." I don't fully believe that. I think that's an almost insulting to how much control he has and the way he's positioned himself in the sport. I think he's been very smart over the years at making himself more powerful than most of the individual owners. And, you know, why do you guys have a team back in Winnipeg? Because the guy who owns your team, Mark Chipman, realized there's a proper way to deal with Gary Bettman, and you never go away from that, mm-hmm. and you get rewarded. So I think Bettman's very powerful. But I do think at the end of this, there's going to be a debate on whether or not he's the right face for the game. I do believe that he's never going to be able to present the Stanley Cup again. And I also got to wonder if someone close to him is going to say to him, you know what, maybe it's time. And I don't think it'll happen right away, but I think it will happen.
Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada, thanks very much for joining us. A terrific insight, as always, here on this Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And, of course, happy Hanukkah, Elliot.
Yes, happy Hanukkah to you guys, too. And happy holidays to the rest of you in Winnipeg who don't eat latkes at this time.
Thanks very much, Elliot.
Take care, guys.
Take care very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Not sure why this is playing, but welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Elliot Friedman of CBC's Hockey Night in Canada for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe. Get us sent to your iPod each and every week. Also, a big thank you to Bruce Daubigan for having joined us earlier in the program.
Great. I mean, you don't get better insight into the ins and outs of the hockey landscape than Elliot Friedman.
That's true.
And Daubigan was great there for the media. Remus, are you going to come in the segment here or what?
Yeah, I was going to say, come on, you're not excited for Cy at the Bills in Toronto game? He's playing halftime.
I'm not excited about the Bills, period.
Like every time they play that game in Toronto, like the Bills were always terrible. I guess they're playing Seattle, so that's a playoff team that needs to win the game to get in the playoffs, or to get a to try and win the NFC West at least.
Reem, it's almost like you know, they were the organizers of that game were sitting around and they're like, yeah, so the Bills and Seahawks are coming up, and they're like, yeah, I think we're going to have to get that Gangnam Style guy here.
Is Chan Gailey in the beard competition with you guys?
I don't know.
He might be. I'm not sure. tomorrow for football is just incredible.
Yeah.
We're off topic, obviously, now. But, well, there's no hockey to talk about.
Well, so Drew, you kind of left the segment unplanned as well, if I recall.
I thought we were going to go a little bit long with Elliot.
Well, we did.
We did. You know, we'll fill. We got a couple minutes we can fill, and then we'll get to cheers and jeers.
Richie, be easy on Drew. He's obviously been out buying expensive suits. I can take some pointers from Drew. So, you know,
how about we talk about the fact that Ezzy came to my wedding in Kentucky and brought one shirt for all of the events total, and then poured butter on it.
Yeah, the first night of Friday, he went to Joseph A. Bank.
I didn't pour butter on it. We had that the dinner before your wedding, the day before your wedding, I was putting butter on my potato, and I got butter on the shirt, and then it stained it, so I had to go get another shirt. Because the only reason why I brought one shirt
is... You tried on my shirt, what happened?
I only needed one shirt.
It didn't fit.
It was a nice shirt, though.
The thing about clothes is you can always buy new clothes. I always seem to forget, you know, a toothbrush or deodorant when I go on a trip, but hold on, Walmart.
On that point, Ezzy, didn't you forget your toothbrush after our Minneapolis trip?
No.
Yes.
You did.
I had a toothbrush.
You left it in Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah. And Maddie Leibel of The Big Show's got my passport.
How long did it take you?
He has your passport still?
You have your passport?
Yeah, I left it in his car. I mean, I haven't gone anywhere.
Is it still in his car?
Somewhere.
Maybe Mars. But, Ezzy, how long did it take you to buy a toothbrush after Minneapolis, though?
What do you mean? I got it the day I got back.
That's not what I heard. The intel report I got was you came back on Monday, and you didn't get the new toothbrush until Thursday.
That's not true.
Which really makes me feel sorry for your coworkers.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, there's no way I could get away with that bad breath, maybe for like a day, but 3 days? No, I went to the pharmacy and got a toothbrush the next day.
Okay. Well, glad we cleared that up.
I don't know. That's not what I heard.
But, you know what?
Your sources are incorrect.
Richie, I think there's certain things we're better off not knowing.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, even if that is true, you don't bring that up on air.
Why not?
I mean,
Richie. Why not? You just don't buy a toothbrush.
It's true.
Richie doesn't...
We've built our reputations around throwing each other under the bus
as well as good breath, apparently.
Yeah, so I don't disagree with that.
Remus is the...
He's the Mr. Maxwell of the legal curve.
What's
apparently.
Mr. Maxwell?
The guy who dresses well, you know, Mr. Manners or Miss Manners, whatever.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I have no idea.
Can we go to Cheers and Cheers?
What show was that on?
It wasn't a show. It was like Mr. Maxwell's the guy who always rates if the celebrities dress well or not.
Joan Rivers?
Is that Happy Days?
I was going to say, that's Joan Rivers.
Happy Days, Drew?
It was Mr. Maxwell initially. It was always Mr. Maxwell, then Joan Rivers has sort of taken that over.
I'm gonna Google that.
Okay, can you click on the cheers and jeers part first?
Cheers, congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg.
Well, I'd love to cheer something hockey related. And I could probably cheer players in other leagues, but I'm going to give a cheer out to this beard growing competition that we're going to be in, raising money for the Heart and Stroke Foundation. We'll be mentioning it on the radio. We're going to get some people from the Heart and Stroke Foundation, as well as Festival de Voyageurs, which is, I believe, in its 41st year this year. So it's starting in the end of February, so I'm going to cheer that. Because, I mean, any excuse, Richie, for me to grow one of my big Ginsberg beards, I'm going to take advantage of that, because you know, it gets pretty fluffy.
It's a good cause.
So it's a good cause. And cheers. Unfortunately, I'm not going to cheer anybody in the NHL or the NHLPA because until we get a deal done.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm not going to cheer anybody there. So
that's no one will criticize you for that. That's for sure. Richie,
I'm going to give a cheer to one of our fans out in San Fran. Brian L. Grebe is one of our fans. His son,
yep.
Connor, is battling cancer.
He's 4 years old.
Halfway through chemo. The doctor says he's going home tomorrow. Listen to the show. Let's hope he gets better. Sounds like he's doing well. Let's give him our best. And
Ezzy sent them some Illegal Curve merchandise earlier this
week. Yes, good cheer. Yeah.
All the best of holiday season.
Yeah, that's a good cheer, Richie. I second that.
I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers. It's on a personal note. I'm going to cheer my grandparents, Rose and Joe Mindell. Yesterday, I think it's safe to say, was a bad day in society, given the actions in Connecticut. It's a day that many of us won't soon forget, if ever. It reminds us that evil does exist in this world, and there is no rhyme or reason for when it rears its ugly head. The atrocities in Connecticut left us all stunned, shaken, and searching for answers that simply do not exist. In the midst of all the confusion and anguish, we look to our loved ones for support and guidance, and we look around us to find gestures of good and love that give us hope to carry on in the midst of the unspeakable evil. Last night, with the vivid images of Connecticut still flashing by all of our eyes, with my wife next to me and my aunt and my parents by my side, I was able to celebrate the 72nd wedding anniversary of my grandparents.
That's awesome.
In the midst of a day of horror, I cheer my grandparents, who provide us with a beacon of love every single day, and for that reason, they get my cheer this week.
It's a good cheer. Good cheer.
That's it for this edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests, Bruce Dalbiggin of the Globe and Mail and Elliot Friedman of CBC's Hockey Night in Canada. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Just search for Illegal Curve. And, you know, you can all, and the website for your latest NHL, CBA, and Winnipeg Jets news is www.illegalcurve.com. For producer Tim, for producer Remus, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Richard Pollock, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.